A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's been thinking about language learning, and he wrote in with a whole bundle of questions that all circle the same tension. He grew up in Ireland, spent summers in Portugal, and his big regret is picking up a Portuguese textbook too young instead of just talking to people. The thrill came later, when he actually spoke.
The book killed the thing before the thing even started.
Then he draws this contrast between Ireland and Israel. Israel revived Hebrew by making it a living lingua franca. Ireland tried the same with Gaelic, and it didn't take, partly because kids spent years memorizing conjugation rules instead of actually using the language. Children don't learn through grammar drills. They play, they pick it up. So why do we teach languages backwards? He's also asking about audio methods like Pimsleur, and he's frustrated that structured ear-first learning seems monopolized by expensive private courses. What's out there for someone who wants to learn by listening and speaking?
That last one is the question behind the question. He wants to know if the alphabet is a gatekeeper or just furniture.
Can you learn a language with a foreign writing system well enough to communicate through speech alone?
So where do we even start with this? Because the gap between Daniel's instinct, put down the book, just speak, and the institutional reflex to start with grammar and writing, that gap is where all the interesting stuff lives.
And it's not just a preference thing. There's a mechanism underneath it.
It's a classroom-friendly, testable, orderly approach, and it fails almost completely at producing speakers. It is. But the evidence is overwhelming. You can spend 6 years conjugating verbs in workbooks and still freeze the moment a real human being says something you didn't rehearse. Daniel's experience with Portuguese is basically the universal story. I've met people with advanced degrees in French literature who can't order a sandwich in Paris without panicking.
That's a real thing?
It's absurdly common. There's a whole category of graduate students who can analyze Proust but can't ask where the bathroom is. Their knowledge is entirely on the page. It never made the jump to the tongue. And the popular version of this is, children's brains are sponges. They just absorb everything effortlessly.
Which is wrong in a specific way.
They played a continuous stream of nonsense syllables with no pauses, no cues about where words began or ended. Just a string of sounds. And the babies tracked what are called transitional probabilities between syllables. Certain syllables reliably followed others, forming what you'd think of as words, and the infants picked that up purely through statistical exposure. They were doing unconscious math on sound patterns. They try something, they get a response, they adjust, they try again. That's the engine.
So it's not that the sponge is better. It's that the sponge is submerged.
And the adult learner does the reverse. An adult walks into a language class and the first thing they get is a conjugation table. Present tense, past tense, future tense. Here are the rules. Now apply them. It is, and here's the part that explains Daniel's frustration. Adults still have that machinery. The phonological loop in working memory, the ability to encode and rehearse sound patterns, it doesn't shut off.
You're running the language through the prefrontal cortex instead of through the basal ganglia.
It's not that adults can't learn. It's that they default to the wrong strategy. When you speak your native language, you're not assembling sentences from rules. You're reaching for patterns you've used 10,000 times. No, and that's one of the biggest misconceptions out there. It's more of a sensitive period. The brain's plasticity for phoneme discrimination does narrow. If you're not exposed to certain sounds before puberty, distinguishing them gets harder.
So the child isn't learning conjugation. The child is hearing I go, he goes, 10,000 times, and the pattern just settles.
And here's the thing. Children do get corrected, but not in the way adults do. The classic case is the R versus L distinction in Japanese. Japanese doesn't have separate R and L phonemes, it has one sound that sits somewhere between them. A Japanese infant can distinguish R and L perfectly well. By about 10 months, if they're only hearing Japanese, That ability starts to fade. The brain prunes distinctions it doesn't need.
So that's the mechanism. Which brings us to the two great national experiments. One that followed the child model, one that followed the adult model.
And the results are about as stark as you could ask for. Let's start with Irish. Daniel grew up in Ireland. He lived this. The Irish language has been compulsory in Irish schools since the foundation of the state. That's exactly the metaphor. The highway's still buildable, but it takes more work and it'll never be quite as smooth.
Which is where Pimsleur comes in.
Paul Pimsleur was an applied linguist who looked at this problem in the early 1960s and basically said, the grammar translation method is producing students who can parse sentences but can't order coffee. His critique was that language instruction had the whole sequence backwards. You learn to speak first, then read, then analyze, the way children do it.
And his method was 30-minute daily audio lessons, no written materials at all.
Right. The structure is deceptively simple. Each lesson introduces a small set of words and phrases through a conversation, and then it drills you on them using what he called graduated interval recall. You're asked to produce a word or phrase, then the spacing between repetitions stretches out in a specific pattern, seconds, then minutes, then hours, then days.
Now contrast with Hebrew.
Eliezer ben Yehuda arrives in Palestine in 1881. Hebrew at that point had been a liturgical language for nearly 2,000 years. Nobody spoke it at home. Nobody bought groceries in Hebrew. It was a language of prayer and scripture, period. It is. The spacing effect has been replicated in hundreds of studies. But Pimsleur built it into the audio format in a way that feels organic. You're not memorizing a list. You're participating in a conversation, and the program prompts you to respond at carefully timed intervals.
And it's exhausting.
It really is. 30 minutes of active recall, actually producing speech, not just nodding along, leaves you mentally wrung out. But that's the point. Passive listening doesn't build speaking ability. You have to generate the language yourself. Think of it like the difference between watching someone play piano and actually sitting down at the keys. Watching feels productive. It isn't.
Daniel mentioned the cost issue. These courses aren't cheap.
They're not, and that's a legitimate criticism. The Pimsleur company charges something on the order of $120 per level, and a full course might run 5 levels. That's $600 to learn one language. It prices out a huge number of people who'd benefit from the method.
But the monopoly is breaking down.
It is, and this is where Daniel's question about free resources gets interesting. There's a project called Language Transfer that's essentially an open-source audio course built on similar principles. The creator calls it a thinking method. He guides you through constructing the language yourself rather than memorizing phrases. It's available for Greek, Swahili, Arabic, several others, completely free.
So, the Irish model said, learn the rules, and someday you'll be able to speak. The Hebrew model said, start speaking, and the rules will follow.
And one of those worked.
The other produced a country where 40% of people say they can speak a language, and fewer than 2% actually do. That's a 96% attrition rate from the classroom to the street.
I hadn't done that math.
I just did it in my head. It might be slightly off.
It's in the ballpark, and it makes the point, so that's the community question. But Daniel's other questions are about what you do when you don't have a community, when you're an adult trying to learn Greek on your own, and you're staring at a grammar book or an audio course.
Let's talk about Pimsleur.
The Pimsleur method is audio first, and it's built on a few specific principles. Spaced repetition. You hear a phrase, you're prompted to recall it at gradually increasing intervals. High-frequency vocabulary, the first few hundred words that do most of the heavy lifting in conversation. And forced production, you're not just listening, you're required to speak out loud in response to prompts. No writing, no grammar explanation, no conjugation tables.
And the research on this?
It works well for building oral fluency in the first 500 to 1,000 words. People who do a full Pimsleur level can typically handle basic transactional conversations. Ordering food, asking directions, simple introductions. The problem is, it plateaus. The method doesn't provide the massive input that children get. 30 half-hour lessons is 15 hours of audio. A child gets that much exposure in about a day and a half. You can't compress 10,000 hours of contextual input into a course.
So, it's a starter engine, not a full vehicle.
And the pricing reflects that, but not in a good way. Pimsleur courses run about $150 to $300 per level. Each level is 30 half-hour lessons. to get through three levels, which might get you to a functional tourist level, you're looking at somewhere between $450 and $900.
For 15 hours of audio content.
For audio content built on a technique, graduated interval recall, that isn't patentable. The underlying method is public domain. The production values are real. You need native speakers, careful pacing, good audio engineering, but the technique itself isn't proprietary, and yet there's no equivalent free or open source alternative at scale.
Why not?
Because production cost is non-trivial, and nobody's figured out a funding model for it. You can't just generate this with a script and a text to speech engine. The pacing matters, the natural pauses matter, the native speaker intonation matters. Someone has to produce it, and that costs money. The open source community hasn't cracked the pay for studio time problem.
The monopoly isn't on the technique. It's on the willingness to actually produce the thing.
On the marketing. Pimsleur has been around since the 1960s. They have brand recognition. They have placement in airport bookstores. They're the default answer when someone says, "I want to learn a language in the car."
Which brings us to Daniel's alphabet question. Can you learn Greek well enough to speak it without learning the Greek alphabet?
The short answer is yes. Oral fluency and literacy are neurologically separable. We know this because illiterate adults in oral cultures demonstrate full grammatical competence in their native language. They can speak with complete syntactic complexity. They understand register. They can tell jokes. They can argue. They just can't read or write. Literacy isn't a prerequisite for fluency.
The alphabet isn't the gatekeeper.
It's not. But there's a catch. Without the alphabet, you can't use a dictionary. You can't look up a word you heard. You can't read a sign. You can't text someone. You're confined entirely to oral transmission, which limits your vocabulary growth and makes error correction harder. If you mishear a word and you can't look it up, that error just stays.
The alphabet is a tool, not a prerequisite. It's the search engine into the language.
That's the best way to put it. Learning the alphabet gives you lookup access. Skipping it gives you faster initial speaking fluency, but a hard ceiling. You'll eventually hit a wall where you can't grow your vocabulary fast enough through listening alone.
What's the optimal path, then?
I think the evidence points toward audio first for the first 200 to 300 phrases. Get your mouth around the sounds. Build the procedural fluency, the basal ganglia stuff. Then introduce the alphabet as a tool, not as a prerequisite. The mistake is starting with the alphabet, because then you're back to the adult model. You're decoding symbols before you've ever produced a sound.
Daniel's instinct to put down the book is neurologically sound for the first phase. The book becomes useful later. The error is starting there.
The error is also treating the book as the thing itself rather than a reference tool. A grammar book is a map. You don't learn a city by memorizing the map. You walk around, you get lost, you ask for directions, and you consult the map when you need it.
The map isn't the territory. We've arrived at a cliché, but it's the right one.
It's the right one because it's true. And the Greek case specifically. Daniel mentioned Greek, and I think it's worth saying, the Greek alphabet isn't actually the barrier. It's 24 letters. You can learn the Greek alphabet in a weekend. The barrier for most adult learners of Greek is the same as for any language, the lack of an oral community. If you're learning Greek in Dublin or Jerusalem, you don't have a Greek-speaking community around you. That's the real scarce resource, not the alphabet.
That loops us back to the Hebrew-Irish contrast. The scarce resource is always community. Ben Yehuda built one. The Irish system assumed one would emerge from the classroom, and it didn't.
Which is where I think Daniel's framing has a blind spot. He's asking about methods, Pimsleur versus grammar books, audio versus text, and those matter, but they're secondary. The primary variable is whether you have a reason to speak the language with real people.
It's not the method.
Go on.
I spent 3 years in the 1990s selling Berlitz courses, door-to-door in Cork. I sold language courses to people who never opened the books. The ones who actually learned, the ones who came back and told me it worked, they were the ones who had a reason. A girlfriend in France, a job transfer to Germany, a holiday planned and they wanted to not be the tourist who points at things. The materials were almost incidental.
You were selling the promise, not the method.
We were selling a set of cassette tapes and a workbook for about £300. The tapes had pauses for you to repeat. It was Pimsleur before Pimsleur was a brand. Same idea. Graduated recall, native speakers, the whole thing. The tapes were fine. The problem was that most people did the first three lessons and stopped. The ones who kept going had a person on the other end waiting to hear them try.
Daniel's right about the book, but he's wrong about Pimsleur being the answer.
The real monopoly isn't on audio courses. It's on immersion. You can't buy a community of speakers. That's what Ben Yehuda built, and that's what Ireland never managed. Every language app is selling you a simulation of conversation. It's not the real thing. It's a treadmill with pictures on the wall. I had a customer, a man in his 50s, learning Italian. Did the whole course, all three levels, never missed a day. Went to Rome, walked into a cafe, and froze. Couldn't order a coffee. The tapes had taught him to respond to prompts, not to talk to a human being who might say something unexpected. The simulation broke on contact with reality.
That's the plateau we were describing. The method gets you to a certain point, and then you need something it can't provide.
The something is another person who doesn't care about your accent.
What's the thing you'd tell someone who wants to learn Greek but doesn't want to learn the alphabet?
I tell them the alphabet is the easy part. 24 letters. You can learn it on the flight over. The hard part is finding a Greek person who'll talk to you slowly for 6 months. If you got that, you don't need my cassette tapes. If you don't, the alphabet won't save you.
That's actually the cleanest summary of this entire episode.
I sold the tapes. I'm not proud of it.
You seem fine with it.
I kept a set of the Italian ones. They're in a box somewhere. Never learned Italian.
The misconception I want to name before we close. There are really three that run through this whole discussion. The first is that children learn languages because their brains are sponges. It's not a magical biological window. For phoneme acquisition at that age, yes. The social context is part of the learning mechanism. The baby isn't just processing sounds. They're tracking the speaker's gaze, facial expressions, emotional signals. All of that's part of the language package.
That's both beautiful and inconvenient for busy parents.
It's deeply inconvenient, but it means Daniel's instinct is right in a way he might not have realized. It's not just about exposure to the language. It's about exposure to the language in the context of a relationship. VR language spaces, tandem apps that pair learners with native speakers, the kind of thing where you're not talking to a chatbot but to a real person who happens to be in another country. Do those scale, or are they just higher fidelity simulations?
I think the honest answer is we don't know yet. The technology is improving faster than the research can track. But I suspect the thing that makes community work, the low stakes, ungraded, just messing around quality of children's play, is really hard to replicate in a structured app, no matter how good the latency is.
For Daniel and Ezra, I think the best gift isn't a method at all. It's an environment, a reason to need the language. It is. And audio methods like Pimsleur and language transfer are valuable partly because they give you a safe space to practice before you have to do it in public.
This has been My Weird Prompts, thanks to our producer Hilbert Flumingtop, who apparently has a box of Italian cassette tapes and no intention of ever using them.
If you've got a weird prompt you want us to tackle, send it to show@myweirdprompts.com. We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.